Are you sick of yoga pants? Can we do a whole season?
All right.
On my frustration with yoga pants.
Or I want to do one. The sign of the conflict of our culture right now, especially like in, you know, rad trad movements and stuff, is, or in college campuses, it's like we live in a time where someone can be wearing a chapel veil and yoga pants at the same time. Like, that's true. How you know we don't know what we're doing.
I know we don't. Yeah, we're like a schizophrenic world. Can we just hit play and just start going?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Those are the best podcasts, man. Doing it now.
So we'll just, all right, so we'll just, you don't even have to do an intro.
That's right. We've already, the intro was the last one.
So fish don't know they're in water. So that, and I said, you know, I've caught the same stupid fish multiple times.
How do you know it's the same fish?
Because you throw it away, like you throw it back. It's got a nasty hole, you know, through its mouth because you caught it.
Okay,
you throw
okay.
it back in, 10 minutes later, you catch the same damn fish.
So they don't, but that doesn't mean they don't know they're in water. They just don't know.
Well, that's true. I'm just saying they're really stupid. Okay. But it reminds me of little boys that do the same thing over and over again.
Right.
Like, you have a little kid who jumps off the countertop, you know, trying to, like, fly with a blanket as if it's a cape.
Right.
He bangs himself up. He hurts like hell, and he screams. 5 minutes later, he does it
again.
My daughters don't do that.
Yeah.
They learn.
Yeah, we had
very
We had five boys in a row. Then we had a girl, and we were at the dinner table one day, and I realized, man, everything is different with her. Everything is because we had five. So five boys in a row was a decade of boys. They're about every 2 years. We had a decade of savagery, and and we're sitting at the table, and she's sitting next to me because, like, in our family, when the baby kind of goes from like mom, and then when she's done with the baby at the table, it goes all the way to the other end of the table next to me. So like it's kind of like this graduating thing, and so she's next to me first time. And she takes a bite of food and gets some food on her face. And then she picks up a napkin and wipes it off. And I like stopped. I'm like, family, look. Look at what just happened. But then my son, so the next one up from her, like you said, doing the same thing every time. You would think that a child putting their shoes on, 50% of the time, they would be done correctly.
And so how do they get it wrong 90% of the time?
It's 90% of the time he's wrong. And but in his defense.
Do your kids put underwear on backwards?
Because
they,
why are they putting underwear on?
underwear what am I talking about?
You needed underwear back in the day because this is my defense of children free balling is the word.
Commando.
In Louisiana, they call it shrimping.
Shrimping.
Okay. A long time ago, you didn't wash your pants frequently,
right?
So you wanted to have so you would just wash your underwear. So I'm like, Katie's like, my wife, they're not wearing underwear. I'm like, whatever. You're going to wash the pants anyway. Like, it's going to be. Anyway,
but they pick up the underwear. They look at the front of it, and then they put it on.
Yeah, that's right. I say
it goes backwards.
Tag in the back. It doesn't.
All right.
So my.
But no, I've wondered about how does the shoes end up on the wrong feet, like 90% of the time.
Yeah. No, I don't know.
You know,
maybe it's because what you said about fish. Fish are stupid. You're saying
they are
children.
Children are stupid.
So, Aquinas says they are born in sin and ignorance, not stupidity.
that's a much better way to say
we need
it.
The prayer.
I'm going to tell them
the
that.
The prayer before study. We're praying as a family. We're having these family conversations, which we should talk about.
All right.
And we children, Aquinas said you were born in sin and ignorance.
Definitely.
That's why we need
He's
each
right.
other.
Yeah. He's
right. But, I mean, what do you mean? They're inexperienced is what he means. But
so speaking of sin, my greatest time frame of sin every week is probably the 20 minutes prior to getting in the church Sunday morning, getting in the car to go to church Sunday morning, because I can't find the damn shoes.
Yeah.
And somehow or another.
You can find five different shoes without a pair?
Yeah.
Does that happen to you? Yeah.
All the time.
Wait, but, didn't you write this Well-Ordered Family? I'm here to learn from you.
Yeah, my next book is called The Art of Hypocrisy. It's like, that's my true expertise is hypocrisy.
Yeah.
But I want to understand how it is that finding the kids' shoes for church on Sunday has been delegated to me. This is a real problem.
You need to order your home.
I think it's grounds for an annulment.
It's gotten great for us. The kids have gotten older, so they're getting themselves ready. So this is how we have ordered this system. I have removed their church clothes from their possession, and they're all, the jackets are all hanging up like in the laundry room.
That's right.
But shoes, they wear them once a week, right? Because we're on the farm. They have their Sunday mass shoes.
Yeah.
And Why are they missing every week?
I don't know.
What's the younger ones?
So we try to bring order and structure into that. We've tried the cubby system and like keep the little church shoes in your cubbies, and man, just it breaks down. You have to reinvent that system.
No, we actually have to settle this. My wife recently, she doesn't have a honey-do list. She says it has a honey do you love me list. It's on the refrigerator. And it's because I would go, the reason we needed this list in our communication is because I'm working all day. I'm doing stuff. I'm around the house. I'm around the farm. I'm active. And then I'm sensing she's disappointed. She's like, well, you know, I needed a lot of things done. I'm like, did you see how much I got done today? And I was getting done what I think is the more important things, the necessary things, whatever. You're using the Stephen Covey quadrants or however you're.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, urgent, not important, all that stuff.
That's in here, by the way.
Is it?
Yes, it is. It's called the Family Focus Box, and it's how to organize.
Wait, hold on. We're still talking about my system here.
Sorry.
So the list, the reason the list was helpful is because I can look at it, and I told her, I am doing this to make you happy. Like, this is for your psychological and emotional happiness. It's not because I think this should be done, but I knock those things off the list, and it's everything from what's dishwasher solution to but shoe system is on the list, and I'm just leaving it there. I'm like, I don't know what to do about that. So you're saying reinvent it every.
I have to do it all the time, but it's not that different from business, because any executive knows that he just goes back in full circles and fix the same damn things that he fixed a year ago, and he fixes it again.
Your staff's like in the room listening.
Yeah, they're awesome. They're awesome. But you implement a system with any human beings. I don't care what it is. And you implement that system, and everybody agrees to it. And you come back 6 months later, and you don't recognize it. That's just the way human beings are. We just all kind of drift.
Mm-hmm.
We just kind of drift, you know? And that's
so when I haven't read this. We often in our home, we're discussing. So when there's a problem, something's not working, something's breaking. We're always trying to figure out, is this the system or the person?
Yeah, that's the great question.
Is it virtue or is it like order, you know?
No, you're exactly right. And that's probably the most important business lesson I ever learned, really, is that exact thing. Where do you point the finger? And what I mean by that is when I really got into systems management, like really started studying different business efficiency philosophies and tools, I learned from like the manufacturing world, Lean Six Sigma, and these other kind of business philosophies, that when something goes wrong, the first place you should look is the system. How did the system fail us? When I was early,
I thought the good CEO was always supposed to say it was me.
Well, it is. It is. Let me tell you why, though. Because you can point the finger at the person and say, he screwed up. Or you point the finger at the system, and because I'm the keeper of the system, I'm pointing the finger at myself because I say, my system failed this person.
Mm-hmm.
That's what leadership really is you first point it at the system. So when you're at your home and you said it, did the person mess up, or was an order or structure or a process messed up? And when that process is met, that's on you and your wife. That's not your kids. You're the guardian of the system.
Right.
And so pointing at your finger, say, how did the system fail you? You first do that. After you've improved that and refined that, and the person's still messing up, then you point the finger at them. You still get to blame people at some point, but you have to first.
It's funny. I feel like most people they couch, that you're blaming and making it sound friendlier. But like, no, there's times where it's actually your fault.
Of course, that's why you fire people.
Yeah.
If the world did not fire people, we'd all be bankrupt.
All right. So I'm gonna speaking of firing people.
No, you can't find you can't fire your kids. You cannot do that.
That's what I'm trying to word it. Is I hear people talk about we need to make businesses like families, and part of me like vomits a little bit in my mouth because
businesses like families or families like business. Which one were you?
They want to make businesses like families.
I think that's kind of silly.
Well, obviously I have trouble with it, but I think in some instances it seems like the business itself becomes a community and family. And it actually might be really good. Like, it's good for the people in that business. And because we live in a culture that has so little culture, community, people are lonely. They do lack meaning. So they get it at work. Now, it's good to have meaning at work. None of that is bad. But it actually becomes a replacement to where the work is cordoned off the company, the organization, whatever it is. And, like, that is, I mean, especially in the church world, when you mix in like apostolic endeavors with like prayer and rules of life with your, even like people you're working with, it becomes a community where people aren't capable or they're not actually living like loving their neighbor and having community, like, I don't know, in it's not integrated. But also the thing that bugs me is you can't fire your family.
Exactly right.
And that's why the church, I read a fascinating, it was actually by an Anabaptist, but he was saying, he thinks in America, it's actually, we're hyped up on discerning our gifts. You know, there's analogies in scripture for what the church is, mm-hmm. right? You know, the church is an organization. We know, you know, philosophically, the church is a perfect, or as a society, right? Perfect society, all these things. But he says, when we're discerning gifts, it's actually, that's really hyper-individualist. Like, there is somewhere where I can serve. I need to discern my gifts and give it over. Whereas more common in scripture is that the church is a family, and you need to put up with one another, and you belong to one another, and you're not getting out of this. Mm-hmm. That's the attitude. So I guess my question is, yeah, you seem to be scoffing a little bit at the idea that a business is a family.
No, I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I'm saying, so, for example, I'm not saying that you should treat a business like a family. I'm not. I'm saying you should treat your family a little bit more like a business.
Okay. And
to me, there's a big difference there. So I'll explain. So, for example, I had this one lady that we kind of became business partners with a long time ago, creating a certain product.
You know, we're recording this.
Yeah, and she will be named. She will be nameless, right? But the fact is she had been divorced multiple times, and she had made a good product. But when we're basically putting the deal together, she's like, "We're going to make this work no matter what. This is like a marriage. We are sticking together through thick and thin." I'm like, no, it's not like a marriage, and you don't have a good track record
That's
in that
right.
anyway.
Yeah, why are you using
so,
that analogy?
Yet we are not comparing this to what I have at home. So, no, it's a business arrangement. We have contracts, and there's ways in and out of those, and that's it. So, do we talk about the business family here? Yeah, but it's a very loose thing, and I think when you push that analogy too far, it's cheapening your family, and it's pretend, because we all know, you know, hey, imagine a wife who would leave her husband just because she can get $10,000 more a year from this other guy down the street.
Right.
And employees do that all the time.
Right.
And that doesn't make it immoral.
Right.
So the analogy comes to a screeching halt, slams into a wall. And so I don't like talking about business like family. However, the whole point of well-ordered family is that corporate America, Jason, has
nice,
been
nice
like,
plug.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. So corporate America has gotten really good at getting things done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, they might do evil things with that ability, but their ability to set a vision, mm-hmm. to align troops around that vision, to have bulletproof systems and awesome metrics of success and accomplish those goals, they're really good at that. Corporate
right.
America has perfected that. Families need to take some of those abilities and like apply it to the family life. So that's what I mean by a family can learn from business. We can bring a little bit of our business knowledge into family life and use some of those things because of the complexity of the world. We need to bring some business tools into family life.
Right.
So
yeah,
business helps family. I treat my family a little bit more like a business. I do not treat my business like my family.
Right.
Big difference.
I actually think, so in your defense, because, you know, here, this is a, you know, quasi-agrarian, you know, homesteading show. I think what's fascinating about what you're saying, is there something like, oh, that doesn't sound like what we're trying to, like homesteaders and like, that doesn't, but it actually, when I was doing the research for Leaders of the Land, there's my plug.
Yeah.
What was fascinating is the loss of the family as a working unit.
Yes.
Was detrimental.
Absolutely.
And we haven't recovered from it. And they are, the family and work is divided, which is why we're talking about these. I mean, we're even talking about two separate things. So I definitely appreciate, I hope we're not repeating this. Was this in the last podcast?
It doesn't matter.
But when you say I'm treating my family like a business, I think some people go, oh no, the family is meant to be an emotionally supportive conglomerate where you rest from things like business, which is detrimental. The two things that does is it makes everyone, the purpose of the family is to support the individual in their pursuit of excellence and success, which is not a family. That's not a family, right? That's a spa.
Well, go find any farm family or any small business family that you know, where the family is producing their own wealth. They're not getting in a car and driving to some other dude's office building, right?
Right.
the family operated. The children were like employees. I mean, if you're running a farm and your sustenance comes from that, or even if you're a dairy farm and you're producing milk and you're driving it somewhere to sell it, mm-hmm. that family is partaking in that. There is a business component. I mean, right. every farm family throughout history had to operate their family a little bit like a business. Mm-hmm. And that was there's a lot of good things in that. In fact, that's been so separated because everybody gets in their car and drives to an office to where business and family is so separated, it's detrimental, like you're saying. So I think that there's any good farm is the easiest way to look at it. You can drive down the road and you'll see little farmhouses and they got the big silo and they got the tractors and the barrel of hay and all this. And I'm sitting there looking at it saying, you know, the husband and wife and the kids, maybe there's an uncle, maybe there's, you know, son-in-laws. Their life rotates around that business, mm-hmm. and it's a family, and it's a business, and that's a beautiful thing. I think that's very natural. The unnatural thing is the complete divorce right. between those two.
Yeah, so what you're I appreciate what you're saying because it is true. I know that my family, because we have a farm, not our full-time, we're homesteading, but we do have a commercial dairy, and we sell products. We do agritourism events, things like that. But it absolutely shapes our life. We have to have a business meeting.
Yeah.
Every day because, yeah. I mean, my son called. He said, well, we didn't feed hay because when we started the tractor, some kind of oil light came on, which I actually don't think is what happened. But, you know, so we're communicating based on what we have to do something together. Most households don't have they don't do anything, and they don't do or make anything. So they're just there for one another. Now, they might have recreational things, but it seems that what the family tends towards is, one, is childish endeavors or I mean, we can make it childlike, but you become dominant things like sports, da 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 da. Basically, stuff kids do.
Yeah.
And then in recreation and play, not like not the gravity of work, but also, I think it completely it makes it very difficult for a father to know what to do. I want you to be a good dad. Great. What do you want me to do? Which is funny because I picked up your book and I'm flipping through it, and there's all these like agendas and to-dos and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm imagining guys are liking this. In fact, I was going to ask you, you told me you spoke at a conference with college students.
Yeah.
And a ton of them came, like 1,000 of them came to a talk on ordering your family. And they don't have a family.
Crazy.
Was it mostly guys?
No, it was a good mix. So the conference was SEEK, which is the Focus Missionaries kind of big annual conference. A lot of graduates, you know, people who are out of college who are former missionaries for Focus, they come. I think it's kind of like a reunion for the former missionaries, but it's mostly college kids with a good amount of young families. So I go into this big room where I was giving this talk, and I'm not kidding you, Jason. Like, I told my staff, I'm like, all right, I'm going to give this talk kind of practicing my whole spiel about this new business I'm starting, Wellworder Family. WellorderFamily.com. Well, did I say WellorderFamily.com? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say WellorderFamily.com. So I'm going to this room, and there's probably 500 people in it, and I'm 30 minutes before my talk, and I'm like, I'm in the wrong room. Mm-hmm. You know, and I found the person who was in charge of all this. I'm like, I'm in the wrong room. I must be in, like, mm-hmm. Scott Hahn's room or something. Right. You know what I mean? And he's like, no, this is your room. I'm like, why are they here? I thought I was going to have 10 people. I really honestly – it wasn't false humility. I thought I had 10. I thought I was gonna have 10, 15 people, and then 500 more people piled in. They had to close the doors. Like, people were trying to get in from the outside because it was fire code issues. They couldn't. It was a madhouse. So I had over 1,000 people, and I actually did that really stupid thing where you take your camera and you hold it up and you're like,
"Oh no!"
I did that because, you know, I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. But I thought I'd put
you know
that
what?
On.
Just cut the show.
No, I was like, I wanted to prove it to my wife because I didn't think she'd believe me.
So, no, okay, then
so,
that's a defense.
And then the next time, I'm going to have everybody say, hi, Ashley. I'm going to start doing that, but everybody's saying hi to my wife. Yeah. So, but anyway.
I mean, she likes that.
Yeah, she probably will hate it. But anyway, what the hell was I talking about?
These college
students.
So
why are these people coming to this? And so, you know, the talk is about how to use business tools in your family life. And after it, I was like, why did you come? So young families with little kids, that's obvious. They're pulling their hair out. Get that. We get that. But there was a lot of young couples who were dating, a lot of engaged couples. Hmm. And that I realized I need to make an engagement of this right away because these people are starting the whole pre-Cana process, and pre-Cana is lame.
Yeah.
It just sucks,
to be frank. We can do another show.
It sucks.
I'm a terrible story.
And so here's the idea that they get naturally. They understand this. These young Catholic kids who want to get married, mm-hmm. they've already discerned they're not going to be a priest or whatever, and they want to get married. And they're studying business. A lot of these mm-hmm. kids were studying business or accounting or whatever. And so I start by saying, imagine a young man and a young woman graduate college, and they decide they're going to start a coffee shop together. It's their dream to have a coffee shop. Well, if they've heard of this thing called the internet, then what they're going to do is they're going to search on the internet, how do I start a small business? How do I be an entrepreneur? And they're going to get gobs of great resources on how to create a mission statement, how to choose your core values. What are the systems I need for like managing my inventory and making payroll? And what are the metrics I'm going to use for social media engagement? How many lattes do I sell versus decaf, you know, whatever, whatever. They're going to document these processes because they have to delegate to employees. They're going to do all of these things that every small business owner does because the resources on the internet today are incredible for mm-hmm. this. And they're going to spend hundreds of hours, maybe 1,000 hours in preparation to really launch this. They're going to work really hard in asking all of these questions. But here's where I get kind of pissed off, Jason. If that same young couple was getting married, they wouldn't spend 1/10 of the same energy mindset. They wouldn't ask 1/10 of those same kind of questions for their marriage, for having a family. So why are we putting so much more mental energy and precision of thought into something like running a business to make money than we are in the most important joint venture, most important partnership of your life, which is your marriage?
Hold on, let me argue with you then. All right, because I would say family is so natural. Adam and Eve didn't have I think they probably looked at how the parts fit together pretty quick and, yep. you know, figured, but they still had to order, you know, so family is natural.
Yes.
What seems to be the reason that we're not giving it that time or that we would actually need to give it the time is that we don't have the surrounding tradition, custom, culture that this is how you – that's why I tell my wife and I are discussing. You know, it's exhausting when you're making these constant decisions on, like, should we do this or should we do that? We got invited to this or we didn't get invited to that or, you know. It's like everything is our choice, and we're making everything because we don't live in a traditional society.
You're right. So if we did live in that traditional society,
we wouldn't need all this stuff. We wouldn't do business planning.
We would not.
So maybe that the world run by business, you're saying, okay, that is what our world is run by. It's run by business. So you need to give this sort of attention, and then the other side of that is that these college students, I'm from my own experience, from all the experience of Fraternus, these, you know, St. Joe's Farm, fraternus.net, all of these things is that young dads, most of us, and I bet actually at SEEK, a lot of conversions, a lot of people that are maybe serious in the faith for the first time or had a conversion in college, like, I don't know how to do this based on the examples of what I saw unravel in my own home. So
dude, you've seen the stats on drugs family. Moms and dads taking antidepressants, anti-anxiety pills, like it's out of control. Mm-hmm. 25% of children, Jason, have clinically diagnosed anxiety disorder, like to where they're not able to function like normal kids because they have so much anxiety. That if we were all living on farms in 1800, you might be worried about what you're going to have for dinner sometimes, but mm-hmm. you're not needing medication for anxiety.
So the attention, you know, that they gave the coffee shop, you're saying we need to be giving to ordering our family because the environment, we're the fish that don't know we're in water.
Stupid. So I think as corporate America has gotten more and more and more efficient, and it has, the family has gotten less and less and less efficient. It's like a direct anti-correlation, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever. I mean, it's the direct inverse. You know, as Apple Computer and Google have mastered the ability of like interrupting my day 1,000 times with my damn iPhone. Mm-hmm. And as Netflix and Amazon and cable and the news and the media have mastered the art of like screwing with my kids' brains. Mm-hmm. Okay. And as society has been structured to where you have to get in the car to go do anything and everybody plays 1,000 sports and everybody and moms have to do yoga class and all this garbage. Everything has gotten so complex, we need to actually use the same business concepts that businesses use to get really focused. So they used to say, Jason, in business that the big eat the small, like big fish, mm-hmm. little fish. Then they started saying, and I've said this for a long time, it's not the big that eat the small, it's the fast that eat the slow. But I think it's even changed now. I think it's the focused eat the unfocused.
Wait, so the big eating the big was just power, that's monopoly. Fast right. eating, that's innovation.
Correct.
And then
now it's the focused that eat the unfocused. I got to find some better way to say it because that doesn't sound as good.
Yeah, no,
but the point is like there's so much stuff in our messed up world. There's so much stuff. Just look at anybody's garage. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. There's so much stuff. And in the corporate world, because technology has kind of leveled the playing field, everybody can do everything. Everybody can have social media. Everybody can have a website. Everybody can have an e-commerce site. Everybody can manufacture because there's white label companies that do everything.
Right.
Everybody can have a podcast.
Anybody can have a podcast,
guarantee it. So everybody can do everything. So the people who are going to prevail are the ones who learn how to not do almost everything. Mm-hmm. They perfect the art of something very, very specific. I think families are strung out because they're trying to do everything. Mm-hmm. And they need to figure out my family, the Gallagher family, exists for the purpose of ABC, and the way we're going to accomplish ABC is 1, 2, 3. These specific goals, and we're going to reiterate that time and time again. Because if we're not rigorous in our focus, in our boiling down our purpose and our objectives and our goals, if we're not rigorous with that, the world pulls us away.
Mm-hmm.
And you've talked about that. The world is pulling people away from the home. They're pulling teenagers away from mom and dad. They're pulling little kids away from each other.
Right.
It's the world is like a magnet just pulling us out. And so we have to be rigorous in our focus. And I think that
is that step one? Is that step one? Is that what you gave the college students? Is that on this book is
so
what are you about?
I think that I've created a 6-part system. Vision, unity, systems, metrics, relationships, and discernment. My little pie chart, okay?
Let me see.
And so the idea is first vision, you got to figure out where you're going. Unity is, look, 1% of success in business, Jason, is having a vision. 99% of success is alignment or unity around that vision.
87% of that statistic is something.
Okay, so you have to have like this incredible alignment. That's unity, and that's family meetings. And then you have systems and metrics, and you have relationships and discernment. The only problem with family is the family member. Like, that's the hardest part. So
right.
You always are going to have family dynamics. You have the greatest systems, the greatest vision, the greatest family meetings, blah, blah, blah. You're still going to have conflict with your spouse.
Well, I'm sitting here thinking about, the spouse you're not getting rid of, but I'm thinking of families that an older teenage boy starts to be like a major problem in the family. It makes me think of, and you made me think of, a monastery. Monastery has to have unity. I mean, we are walking in a unified vision towards God.
Yes.
And if anyone disrupts that, then you have to leave. I mean, that unity, that would be serious. I mean, that would be the place where it seems what most families are doing is not to have a unified vision, because that's restraining to my liberty and
exactly.
That's restrictive to my person, and you're not letting me flourish, and you're controlling me.
Yeah.
So are you finding that families are able to, like, that unity idea? Because that sounds good, but I actually think that would be the one that's going to grate the most.
It's hard. So I got an example. So first of all, I called it well-ordered family order, religious order. You see, mm-hmm. you just referred to an order. Why do they call them religious orders? Why don't they just call them religious communities? Well, it's mm-hmm. because they have a rule of life. They have an order mm-hmm. to their whole day.
This is how we do it.
Yeah. And by the way, the land naturally produces that. Mm-hmm. Like, you talk about laws and vespers, like, you got to milk the cow, at certain times. Like, she tells you that. You don't get to choose that, you know? And so the nature enforces a certain structure. But when you live in a concrete jungle with electricity, your days and nights don't matter anymore. And so it's messed up.
I don't even know what time of day it is.
Right. Yeah. So, but when we have family meetings, there's been twice, there's two examples when I had to fire my teenage sons, or one of them, different sons at different times, one and another one. And so, like, the first time, this was a number of years ago when we had my first kind of sit down annual strategic planning session, and my son was 18 at the time, maybe 17. And he just had a sour attitude. It was just like he was just flopping down on the couch, didn't really want to. He was just, you know, making it very obvious that he thought this was lame and stupid. He didn't want to have this meeting and didn't want to talk about visions and core virtues and things like that. And so I tried in the meeting to kind of like, you know, poke him and get him to shape up, and he wouldn't. So I kicked him out.
Yeah.
I said, you're out.
Yeah.
You know? Now, guess what? That guy is married. And by the way, he got married a couple months ago, and his wife is now pregnant with my second grandbaby on the way. I got two grandbabies on the way. I don't think I've told you that. And my daughter's pregnant, and my daughter-in-law is pregnant.
I didn't think you looked older.
And my wife is pregnant. And we got three babies coming, like, right at the same time, right around the same time. Isn't that crazy, dude? So, yeah, that's what this gray is right here.
Yeah.
But now my son goes on his honeymoon, and the very meeting that he got kicked out of a number of years ago, he said, Dad, I'm going to have that meeting with my new wife on our honeymoon. We're going to set our vision statement. We're going to pick a family motto. We're going to pick a family patron saint. We're going to pick long-term goals for our family. I'm like, that's a great way to – there's other things to do on your honeymoon.
Yeah.
But after that, it's great to have these meetings and talk about this with your spouse.
Like what?
Like going to dinner.
Hold on. Quick story.
Great dinner. So that's all I meant.
On our honeymoon – that's not what I meant. On our honeymoon, we went to Rome, and the little bit of English or Italian, I'm talking to this guy. I'm like, hey, we're on our honeymoon, so if you have like a special room, you know, right outside the Vatican. We're new Catholics. We just converted. And he said, oh, yeah, I got a great room. And so we walk in. It's, you know, it's tiny because in Europe all the rooms are tiny. And it's leopard print all over the walls. And like a zebra back on the bed.
Awesome.
All right, anyway. So your son, that's actually what I thought of, is if someone's going to try to do this. So the analogy is in homesteading. As I've learned, people are like, oh, I want to move to the land. I'm like, oh, yeah, well, here's how we did it. And something I'm realizing is that my children were young enough that they were brought up in it.
Yeah.
And I've seen a number of people where they're like, oh, we're going to move to the land. But you've got a kid who's a complete suburbanite.
Yeah.
And it's grading on everything he has already become.
Yes.
So your teenager, like, you haven't been doing this. It's
right.
going to be harder if you're 20 years in.
Yeah.
You're 10, Absolutely. 15 years in.
Yeah.
Sometimes, especially teenage boys are super irritating to men who are trying to bring order to something because they're acting like a selfish toddler.
My hack to that though, and I've learned, and I've violated my own rule that I tell people I'm a hypocrite. I tell people what to do and then I don't do it very well. Cause I had this problem the other day. I had my other 18-year-old.
Oh, is this the second firing?
This is the second firing.
Okay.
And this kid's an awesome kid. Like anybody who knows, he's not a kid. He's an 18-year-old young man. But I kind of kicked him out, you know, because he just had this sour attitude for this particular meeting. He's not going to listen to this. He'd be embarrassed if he knew I said it. But
I don't want him to listen to
this. So, but, you know, I kicked him out. Well, why? I was reflecting on it afterwards. Well, I write in the book and I tell people in my talks, there are tips. There's like a whole page in that book on tips to engage your teenagers, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What you need to do, you know this from fraternus and just being a human, that the problem with teenagers is they are stuck between adolescent and adulthood. They feel that friction even more than we see it. And our modern world has allowed this like perpetual adolescence, even to where you go to a party for 4 years and do a little bit of school. It's called
mm-hmm.
college.
Yeah.
And it's like there's just no work. There's no responsibility. Now, kids in larger families, I think they are kind of thrust into – they're like mid-level management. They have to do things.
Yeah.
And if you grow up on a farm, again, it's more work. So you don't get to diss the cow or the chickens
right.
or the chores because you want to play video games. Like you have to do things. So – but the way to avoid having to fire your teenagers out of these meetings – is to sit down with them well in advance, like a day or two before, and say, listen, son, I'm trying to have this meeting. You're one of the older kids. You got younger siblings. They're looking at you. I need your input on multiple levels. Number one, you've been around this family and seen our dysfunction for 18 years, and I want your input. I genuinely value it. Number two, I need you to be a good example so that the 15 and 14 and 10-year-old or whatever see a good example. I need you to help me do this. So I want you to think about the following three questions. What should our core values be going forward? Or should we switch our patron saint? Or do we need to pick different quarterly goals?
You fired
goals?
A saint too?
Right. Oh, yeah. I fire saints all the time. It's awesome. I actually think you should have a different saint every year because it gives you an opportunity to develop another relationship. They don't mind. And then you can put up all the saints on the wall. Like you have like the wall of fame with your saints.
Right.
But anyway, that's another story. But ask them. And then here's the thing. In business, there's a big mistake, Jason. Like, the boss thinks he's supposed to run the meetings. That's a big mistake. Mm-hmm. The boss should not, the person in charge of the substance should not be in charge of the procedure. So in law, there's like substantive law and procedural law. So I never run a meeting anymore, okay? Somebody else has to run it. And the more diversity you can have in like running the meeting, we call it being the scribe, okay? Or being the chairman or whatever you want to call it. Ask your teenager to do it. If you have these agendas, which I put in the book, ask that 16-year-old with a bad attitude, we'd like you to chair this meeting. Prep them, you know, prepare them, but get their adult involvement. That's a huge path.
Yeah, treat them like an adult.
Yes.
That's why I think when you're firing an 18-year-old or he's out, I mean, the two reasons is that if he's acting like a child or he's ready to be a man.
Exactly.
I mean, because in which case you wouldn't be kicking him out.
Well, and that's what Fraternus is all about, is like you're trying to get these young men to associate on an adult level with adult men.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, you can't stand it when people think of it as just a youth group.
Yeah.
It's not
very,
that. Yeah,
it's very difficult. I mean, but we've – the church has – I don't know if you get Sword and Spade magazine.
I do.
You should. The article on kid Catholics, I think one of the reasons that I would propose that we even have is this youth thing is that youth culture is an economic reality.
Yeah, it is.
Because it's when – because boys used to become men. That was – there was one step.
Boy, you could tell, like, man. In their clothes and old pictures.
Boys became men. When they were capable of being them, and basically when they became producers, because a child is by necessity a consumer, they consume without giving anything back. When the home became a place of pure consumption, right? Dad goes off and makes money, and then we come home and we spend it. That's what a home is for. It wasn't then the sons particularly didn't have something to do; they weren't producers. And then we created youth culture, which is why there's no, I mean, you know, like in the 1920s, 30s, 40s. Even up to the 40s, record companies sold records so that families could listen to it and go, oh, yeah, we want to play that as a family.
I was about to ask you, I have a question. Okay. Did Elvis create youth culture?
Yeah, well, they say that was the ceiling of it, that somewhere between Elvis shaking his hips and Woodstock. Well, actually, so Elvis shaking his hips on TV, that is when somebody put it like, that's when the innocents died in America.
Yeah.
And then Woodstock is when the youth took over the governance of our,
which is
why now, I mean, we're both wearing jackets here because we're such gentlemen, but so think about how you can tell a music station from a 50s music, 60s music, 70s music, 80s music, even 90s music. But at this point, it's all leveled out. It's just this kind of same thing I mean, I guarantee you 2024, 2034, the music and everything, we've even leveled out our clothing where everyone's dressing, you know, like dad in his Under Armour polo, that, you know, son in his Under Armour t-shirt.
Right.
And like,
I've also, you know, how many times have you seen like old black and white pictures? And I think the kid is like 18 years old and he's like 13. And it's because he parted his hair and he had a nice jacket on.
Yeah.
And he just dressed like an adult. And so, I've often thought about that somewhere along the line of the 50s, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the ascension.
Adolescent culture began.
Well, you can look up, if anybody's interested, Kid Catholics is the article that was in Sword and Spade. And I followed the rise of youth culture as a consumerist.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it became, when the 80s and the 90s, this is a whole other podcast. We should have started over.
That's right.
80s and the 90s is when you have the boomers take over control, right, in the 80s and the 90s. And this is when the rise of self-esteem, 1970. And you can look on Google. You can look at word searches. Like,
oh, yeah,
when and in books. So how often words like self-esteem were used in the 60s didn't exist. By the 80s and 90s, everyone is obsessed with it because we become this consumer, self-absorbed culture. And it's not working because now our kids are really miserable. The key is not to make them feel more special. It's actually to help them do things, like do something and be productive. They want to. They don't want to be passive.
But won't the pendulum swing back? I mean, even we're talking about clothes. Jordan Peterson, I feel like he reintroduced the three-piece suit. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, and so there's a lot of people. Like, you can look on Fox News Sunday or something, or not the word. What's the TV channel? I watch football on Sundays, and it's like Fox Sports or whatever. Every one of those guys 10 years ago was like casual, and now they're all in three-piece suits. Now they got weird-looking shoes because they have these like tennis shoe, dress shoes things.
Right.
It's kind of weird to me. But they're all in three-piece suits. It's the new thing. It's like coming back, which I think is great.
Yeah.
And I think men are starting to say, how do I look gentlemanly again?
Right.
And I even heard, I was at this, you know, very secular business convention up in Chicago not long ago, And somehow I was hearing these women in my group were talking, and they made the comment, the feminist movement forced men to act like women, mm-hmm. and now we're angry at them for not acting like men.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the pendulum's going to start swinging back, and I think men are kind of reclaiming their place in family and society and the way they dress and gentlemanliness.
Yeah, I hope
there's
that's
a lot
true.
Of good things. I mean, look, beards came back. Beards are too many beards, too
I know.
Long. You know,
somebody was like, why is like every millennial Catholic podcaster, why do they always have to have a beard?
Yeah, I know.
Like, I don't
yeah.
know. Because I lost my razor.
Well, it's like that's the thing is it's they're scraping to find manliness.
Yeah,
they always right, have so that, to have their pipe, and they overdo
yes,
it. Sometimes,
I was
going to
say yeah,
but,
the,
you know,
the
everyone brews beer. I'm kind of tired of it. You know what I mean? But it's like they're trying to grasp. They're trying to
right.
find these manly things, which is good.
Right.
But
I think the parts the
it's a little where, artificial.
Well,
sometimes.
When it gets costumey, is when you're getting your accoutrement and your taste from the internet.
Yeah.
In which case, it's just another consumer brand.
Yeah.
The much better thing is to understand what the basic decorum of your place is. Now, if you don't have a place, but, you know, it's actually easier for men. It's like, you know what? You need to put a jacket on, and you need to learn how to wear a tie. And
right.
I mean, and start at mass. I mean, give your
yeah.
best to God.
Yeah.
Start at mass. And then, you know, in our family, we're on the farm. We're like savages. I mean, when we're around there, but actually, my one of my mentors, he's a farmer. All my kids are out there barefooted, right? And he grew up on a farm. And I said, oh, you know, like you, my kids aren't wearing shoes. He said, my dad whipped my butt if I went outside without shoes and socks on.
Wow.
And, I mean, just, you know, this was way back in the day, way backwoods. He said, no, and you see pictures of them, and they, you know, they dressed decent. So we try, you know, if we're going into town, you know, put your clothes on. The biggest problem is you put some clothes on. We have this one son, I won't name him in case he ever listens, but we know if it's cold outside because he's wearing jeans instead of shorts, and that because we make our kids do their laundry.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's like, "Oh, I got a hack. Just wear shorts, and that's it." He went right. shirtless from like all summer, and then now it's wintertime, and he's like, "If it's above 40, he's not wearing a shirt."
He looks like Tarzan, like surrounded by the apes, you know, with a little loincloth on. So if I go by the Jason Craig farm, do I see like little Tarzans out there?
Well, I got like one son who's always shirt tucked in, boots on, like hat, and then this other one. And the reason is people give us clothes because they feel sorry for us. And they give me all these dang athleisure clothes.
Yeah.
Like this athleisure is the thing, right? Like that's the basically like a golfer. So
are you sick of yoga pants? Can we do a whole season
all right.
on my frustration with yoga pants?
Or I want to do one. The sign of the conflict of our culture right now, especially like in, you know, rad trad movements and stuff is or in college campuses, it's like we live in a time where someone can be wearing a chapel veil and yoga pants at the same time. Like that's
true.
How you know we don't know what we're doing.
I know we don't. Yeah, we're like a schizophrenic world.
Okay,
yeah.
So I want to wrap up because this is going everywhere.
I have a really important question for you, though. Remember, I
was
told you there's.
All right. Yes.
Don't wrap up before I do that.
Okay. What I want to come back to, I'd like to do another podcast, and I'm going to go ahead and say what it is with you is the unity and having the family meeting,
mm-hmm.
Because that is something that thanks to my wife and actually some of her homeschool. Philosophies, and then my own nature of enjoying substantial conversation instead of chit chat or what are you going to buy next week?
Right.
We have conversations as a family that have substance and meaning. And we've actually started more and more to do because when cultures used to be adult cultures, the children didn't speak at the table.
Mm-hmm.
So we've more and more made our table a place of adult conversation and shut the kids
up. They learn a lot by listening.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I wish they would learn more. So I want to talk about having the family meeting and having those conversations and whether or not they're how those, you know, structure and organics. But we'll do that next time. What's your weird question?
So whenever I see a billionaire entrepreneur, I think of Jason Craig, right? So I was seeing, right? Of course. I mean, isn't that what everybody thinks? So I saw Elon Musk, okay, on Joe Rogan's podcast, and I had this vision that Elon Musk calls Jason Craig. And again, that sounds like a joke, like Elon Musk and Jason Craig walk into a bar. But Elon Musk calls Jason Craig and says, hey, you remind me of Noah, okay? And you look like him a little bit. And a young Noah. And so I'm building an ark to fly to Mars and we're going to colonize Mars, but the ship isn't that big, so we can't take two of every kind. Mm. We can only take 10 animals. And from that 10 animals, we have to populate the Mars. What 10 animals do you take?
Wait, is this, if Elon Musk called me and he said, hello, this is Elon Musk, I would say, who?
Very rich man. Wait,
so you're asking me that question?
Yeah. So like what 10 animals would you take? I had fun thinking okay. about this, right?
Because I would.
You know, do you take a bull and like four cows, or do you take all goats, or do you take some fish?
I don't want to geek out on this because I'm thinking, well, there's nothing on Mars to eat, so what can I?
You gotta take the stuff. Animals. You gotta.
Well, all right. So all presuming right. the animals have something to eat,
of course.
Okay.
Somebody else brought all the
plants. Absolutely would bring a milk cows, because you get manure for the soil, you get milk, you get to eat their babies. For beef, and there's a reason.
And you would hopefully have a bull.
And a bull. That's the backbone, or a bunch of frozen semen, which is the church allows artificial insemination. Right. In case anyone's taking notes.
And that's not even in the 10 animals. That's just like another container.
Yeah, that's right. So I don't need a bull.
We need a whole container of frozen semen.
Yeah, one of them will be a bull in the future. He'll know. He's probably got spares.
Okay. Awesome.
Pigs. Pigs would be next. Rabbits.
I thought about that. I heard that they can produce 200 pounds of meat a year.
Yeah. It's in the book. We go through all those. Yeah, you just read the book. It's in there.
All right. Would you take fish?
There's water there?
Yes. Yeah, of course there's water. Somebody else brought water to Mars.
Like I'm an idiot for not thinking about it. Fish. Where are we? Cows, pigs, fish, chickens. These are all relatively disease-free. Rabbits, that's five. I'm good.
So you just, okay, so two of each.
That's right.
One cow, one bull.
No bull, what? The frozen bull.
Frozen semen. That's right, you got frozen semen. I forgot about
that. We need a pack of gloves and...
A pack of gloves.
To get the semen in there, it doesn't, without the bull, takes
some
work.
How do you do that, Jason?
It involves a straw, a long glove, and lubricant.
All right. Is that a homeschool lesson?
They see it all the time. They're watching there. Yeah.
What about goats? Isn't goat meat the most edible meat, like in the world?
Yeah, you know? They say it's the most eaten. I guess. Yeah. People say you find out when you're homesteading if you're a goat person or a cow person. I'm just not a goat person, but yeah, okay, you bring some goats. That'll be the bonus. And if they die, whatever.
You got all right. Well, maybe Elon will listen to this and
all right. Give me a call. Connor, thank you for being on Till and Keep podcast. Next time we're going to talk about the family unity and having these meetings and conversations a little more specific. Because after this podcast, I don't think you'd be good at that. So I'm interested how you wrote it down.
All right.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks, man.
This episode of Till and Keep has been brought to you by TAN, Fraternus, and Sword and Spade. Till and Keep is a podcast that shows how the primordial command from God to Adam to till and keep the garden applies whether you toil on a farm or in a concrete jungle. Visit tillandkeeppodcast.com to subscribe and follow the show. And use coupon code TILL25 to get 25% off your next order at tanbooks.com.